Broadcasting from the secret military base in Summit Township. This is On the Docket with Connor Dockery.
Who do you think you are?
Weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Presented by Knutson Sporting Goods, your outdoor convenience store. Kettlebell Hotspot, where your functional fitness begins. Bud Light, Bellanote Ristorante, and Tri-County Water. That's good water.
Welcome into On the Docket. Happy Wednesday, hump day. Middle of the week. Got the Tigers to talk about today. Losing yet another game. We're going to do our Pistons season autopsy today. Going to be a little bit of a longer segment. As a matter of fact, probably going to be actually broke up in two parts today. Extra long segment. And then we do have some other tidbits as well, including some Michigan Wolverines basketball news that we got yesterday regarding the NBA draft. So we'll get to all that later on. We're starting off the show today. You already know. Detroit Tigers. 4-3 loss to the Cleveland Guardians last night as the losses continue to pile up. It's not looking good. It has not been looking good for this Tigers team. I mean, compared to this where we were in mid-April. Tigers were able to go on a six-game winning streak. They had sweeps of the Marlins and Royals. They then split a four-game series against the Red Sox, and then they beat a very good Milwaukee Brewers team 2 out of 3 in a series as well. So the Tigers, it was like, all right, got off to a little bit of a shaky start. I think some of those losses were a little bit more bad luck than anything. Based on how the Tigers were playing, it's like, okay, if they keep playing like this, they're bound to win, probably consistently win series. I look at that four-game sweep that they suffered at the hands of the Minnesota Twins as a prime example. Like, this team is much better than this. So, looked like the Tigers were turning it around at that time. They then lose a series to the Cincinnati Reds, which... that was an inexcusable loss series. They should have won. They absolutely choked that first game of that series, 9-8, a walk-off in the bottom of the ninth. So that was an inexcusable series loss. And then they lost 2 out of 3 games to the Atlanta Braves, who have, of course, at that time at least, had the best record in all of the major leagues. And that was a very winnable series as well. They blew the bottom of the ninth again, another walk-off loss. So that was a very winnable series as well. But, of course, that series was significant for a couple reasons. Of course, Casey Mize got injured in that series. We then had Tarek Skubal. He made his last start with the team before his injury. And that's when some of these injuries just really started to pile up. We already had some injuries a little bit before that, but... I mean, since then, it's just been several more players getting injured and the losses starting to pile up. So then going into May, the Tigers win 2 out of 3 games against the Texas Rangers. So it's like, okay, still in a pretty good spot. Just got to try to manage with these injuries. But since that Texas Rangers series to start the month of May, in... over 2 weeks, the Tigers have won 2 games. You heard that right. The Tigers have won 2 games in just over 2 weeks, which, hey, 2 wins in 2 weeks. That's excellent if you're a football team. But that is absolutely awful if you're a baseball team. As a matter of fact, dead last in the majors in that stretch. With only those 2 wins, they got swept by the Red Sox. They lost 2 of 3 to the Royals. They got swept by the Mets. And then lost the series to the Blue Jays this past weekend. And obviously off to a very poor start this series. against the Cleveland Guardians. And what's unfortunate is the Tigers getting off to early leads. Now, very small early leads, but early leads nonetheless. Obviously, 8-2 in the first game, and then last night, 4-3. Guardians actually struck first in the second inning on a single and then a walk. Some traffic on the bases for Kader Montero getting the start last night, who still pitched very well. You then have a sacrifice fly from Tigers killer Stephen Kwan, who overall on the season he's been very poor, but of course he always seems to light up the Tigers every time these two teams meet, and that of course was the case last night. So sacrifice fly makes it 1-0 Cleveland. The Tigers do come back in the bottom of the second inning. They do get two runs. You get a one out walk for Riley Green, and then Torque Bomb. Really need more home runs from this guy. So that's good to see from Spencer Torkelson. 2-1 Tigers, and then the Guardians regain the lead right back in the fourth inning. You got a leadoff walk and then a home run right back, just like the Tigers got their two runs. The Guardians get those two runs right back with a walk and then a homer for Travis Bazzana, the Aussie rookie. 3-2 Cleveland, and then 3-3. Detroit ties again in the bottom of the fourth inning. Bit of a wild play. You have a Riley Green single, back-to-back strikeouts for Torkelson and Perez. How you Lee with a single. And then on a Austin Hedges error, trying to pick off How you Lee on first base after a pitch. He instead airmails it to the outfield, and Riley Green aggressive on the bases. Great jump, great read on the play. He was able to come all the way home to score from second on that error. So just like that, 3-3 tie. Tigers do give up the lead in the seventh inning, of course, with a Stephen Kwan double, which actually was a saved home run by Wenzel Perez. He actually got his glove up there. That ball was going to be over that yellow line and was going to be out, was going to be a home run. But Wenzel Perez making a play, trying to catch it, but it was like it deflected in and out of his glove. But it actually, if you watch the replay, it actually bats the ball downward. The angle goes down after that glove contact, and then it barely deflects off the top of that wall and then in play. So even though Stephen Kwan with a leadoff double, that was a home run saving play, even though he couldn't make the out. So you have a double sacrifice bunt, getting Kwan to third, because that's what the Cleveland Guardians do. They really manufacture runs that way, the old-fashioned way. You have a one-run ground out, 4-3 lead. But the Tigers, they had opportunities. And that's what's been very frustrating with this team during this stretch, is they've had more than enough opportunities to put runs on the board, but they just can't. Seems to be like 2 to 3 runs they cap out at. They've been one of the worst hitting teams during this stretch. I mentioned with the pitching injuries seem to be getting a lot more attention, but you know, for good reason. You lose your two of your top three starters with Tarek Skubal and Casey Mize, and then some other relief pitchers in there. But some of these bats, specifically some of the more consistent bats with the likes of Javier Baez and Gleyber Torres, those are big injuries right now for the Tigers. And then another power bat, Kerry Carpenter, really evident in this huge power outage by this Tigers team. As a matter of fact, they have some of the fewest home runs hit in all the major leagues, and at least in terms of the American League, in that stretch, the last 2 weeks, the Tigers have the fewest home runs hit in the American League, which is beyond brutal. Anyways, eighth inning, you have a leadoff walk for Jamai Jones, a Dylan Dingler strikeout, and then Riley Green hit by a pitch. So it's like, all right, here we go. We got two on with one out. Prime position right here to try to score. And then Colt Keith, ground out. Looked like it was going to be a double play, but just getting the out at second. So still a good position right here. Runners on the corners with two outs. Great opportunity to tie the game at least. Once El Perez walks to load the bases, and then Zach McKinstry pinch hitting, grounds out. Because that's the guy you want to see in a spot like that. Zach McKinstry, said nobody ever. Bottom of the ninth, closer comes in, Cade Smith. Gage Workman strikes out. Matt Vierling and Kevin McGonigal both single. So you have another opportunity. Multiple base runners on with only one out. And then Jamiah Jones frozen on a strike three call right down the middle. And then Dylan Dingler swinging a miss on a pitch about a foot above the plate. And then that's it. So the Tigers had late opportunities. They out-hit Cleveland 7-3. Sorry, 7-4. And they just can't do it. The Tigers lose another game. As I mentioned, only two wins in the last two-plus weeks for this team. And that's it's been the common thing. It's, I know the pitching injuries, whatever, been having some inconsistent starts lately, even from some of the better pitchers like Framber Valdez and even Kader Montero, although he did pitch well last night. Still, they got to find a way to score runs. I mean, just look at this stretch. Three runs, two runs, one, one, three. They did win that one on Friday against the Blue Jays, which is actually a miracle, by the way, when you think about who they were going up against in terms of pitching. Four, two, two. They did have six in the final game against the Royals. One. 3-0, 3-4. Pathetic. Given that the league average is around 4.5 runs per game, anything less than four runs, that's bad. It's low. Low amount, and that's pretty much all the Tigers have done in that stretch. I've mentioned in that time, the Tigers have only gotten more than four runs just the one time. It was that 6-3 win against Kansas City. And we just don't have any of that gritty Tigers that we know. This lineup isn't it. You got to have your Torres in the lineup. You got to get Javi Baez back in the lineup. Kerry Carpenter, of course, add a little bit of power. But, man. And I know each of these guys got a hit last night. Wencel Perez and Hau-Yu Lee. I do like Hau-Yu Lee as a prospect, but it's clear he needs some more time in the minors, probably another year or two in the minors, before we can even look at him as a regular, everyday major leaguer. Wencel Perez, he is just terrible this year. He was pretty solid the last two seasons, but this year, oof, he just doesn't have it. And then Zach Short is, he's been quite terrible calling up. But the common thing with these players is they've been called up as a result of these injuries. And the Tigers, evidently, they don't really have the depth right now in their organization. Very depleted in that aspect. And some of these other guys, you know, Matt, your Max Clarks of the world, your other top prospects still need some more time. In the minor leagues, you don't want to call up guys like that too soon. But yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal right now. And I know your three worst hitters in the lineup are batting 7th, 8th, and 9th. But there's a difference between getting fewer contributions from the bottom of your lineup and getting virtually zero contribution from the bottom of your lineup, which is what this Tigers team is going through right now. And then the rest of the lineup as of right now is mired in inconsistency. Matt Vierling, Spencer Torkelson, Dylan Dingler, he is really cooled off since his hot start. Still, you know, mostly good, but he's been pretty cold lately. Kev McGonigal has cooled off. I still like what he's brought at the plate. His strikeouts, unfortunately, have ticked up now that he's been in the majors for several weeks. Starting to get some more scouting on him. And now we'll see how he adjusts. Really, it's Riley Green. Funny enough, for my complaints about Riley Green last season, chasing pitches, extremely high strikeout rate, he's like the only guy I have no complaints with right now. As a matter of fact, he has been the best hitter. As poor as the Tigers team has been the past two plus weeks, you can't point to Riley Green as a reason why. I would say that easily they've been really suffering at the plate in spite of his tremendous success. I mean, look at this game last night. 2 for 2, 2 runs scored, drew a walk. This guy's been great. Had a multi-hit game the first game of the series as well. Had a nice little hitting streak going on before that. What, 14-game hitting streak before the final game of the Toronto Blue Jays series? So this guy's been great. He's really cut down on his strikeouts. A lot more selective with his pitches. Drawn walks at a lot higher rate. And he's been raking. So again, this power outage, the only thing I would say is that he's been hitting fewer home runs, which I do think that's a little bit of a double-edged sword. We saw him hitting home runs at a higher rate last year, but it came at the cost of a far higher strikeout rate. I will be honest. I actually do like this version of Riley Green a little bit better, where he is not hitting as many home runs, but I would argue he's a lot more well-rounded of a hitter as a result when he's not being quite as aggressive, trying to swing for the fences, chasing out of the zone. So Riley Green has been tremendous, but you can't really say that for the rest of this lineup, unfortunately. So still have a chance to salvage this series. 4-game series. You lost the first two. You have a chance to win these last two, at least go for a series split. Try to set yourself up for success against a struggling Baltimore Orioles team this weekend. Try to get this thing turned around. I know these injuries have stung, but you got to work with what you got. And you don't want this thing to get too far out of hand. Or else, even when this team gets healthy, even if they start to win games, you don't want it to be, you know, a little bit too late and they're a little bit too far behind. So you got to start to turn it around now, especially against a divisional leading opponent like this Cleveland Guardians team. So you got a bullpen game today. You got Drew Anderson starting tonight against Tanner Bibee, who overall has been a really solid starter last couple seasons for this Guardians team. A little bit more of a rough start this season, but hey, how many starting pitchers this year have we seen that have been off to bad starts? But then they have a revitalization game against this Tigers lineup. So we'll see tonight. Hopefully the Tigers can grit this one out. And then looks like Casey Mize projected tomorrow against Joey Cantillo to wrap up the series, a day game tomorrow. So that means a little bit of a shorter show on these airwaves tomorrow. So first pitch tonight will be at 6:40. Live coverage right here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. All right, it's that time. Piston season is over. Had a couple days to really sit on it, think on it. We've got the Pistons season autopsy next. This is On the Docket back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Kettlebell Hotspot, whose expert coach is a Team USA kettlebell sports lifting representative with over 20 years of experience. A well-structured kettlebell workout can burn calories at the same pace as a 6-minute mile, but without the same wear and tear of running a 6-minute mile. I don't know about you, but even when I was in high school, doing a lot of running all the time for gym class and such. Even then, and I was probably my best conditioned shape that I was in, I still struggled to run that 6-minute mile. So the fact that you can get a workout like this, low impact, at the same pace as a 6-minute mile, but you obviously know how tough it is to run a 6-minute mile. All the wear and tear in your joints, your ligaments, not good. But what is good is the workout that you get from Kettlebell Hotspot. So join the team today, Kettlebell Hotspot in Spring Arbor, where your functional fitness begins. So it's that time. Detroit Pistons season autopsy. Now, I will say, it's weird for a change doing a positive season autopsy, because the last three season autopsies I've done, Tigers, Red Wings, Lions, especially the freaking Red Wings, were all more of a negative note. Even though the Tigers still, you know, recovered late, had a pretty decent postseason run, going to game 5 of the ALDS, extra innings, no less. Still was a little bit of a downer of a season based on how the last month or so of the regular season went, blowing the division and such. And you just had that feeling based on the way the team played in the first half of the season. It left us wanting a little bit more out of that Tigers team by the season's end. Had that feeling like, ooh, they probably had the abilities to go at least a step further and go to the American League Championship Series. I think the way that Tigers team was playing at their peak, I think they could have given that Blue Jays team a run for their money. But anyways, back to the Pistons. From the start of the season, going in, this is fresh off of a season where the Pistons not only made it back to the playoffs, but that made a significant jump from the year before. Only won 14 games the year before. They made a big-time jump. They were the number 6 seed in the playoffs, and they were eliminated in 6 games by the New York Knicks. So, coming into this season, I would say based on from what I saw, it was not like the highest expectations for the Pistons. As a matter of fact, some of the national media, they had the Pistons actually taking a little bit of a step back and going down and being a play-in team, which is crazy to think. And I think most of that was in part to losing Malik Beasley with his whole gambling scandal situation, which still, to my knowledge, has not been resolved to this day, which is why he didn't even play at all this season, if he ever plays again. But some of the moves the Pistons made in the offseason, of course, they made the trade for Duncan Robinson, getting another quality 3-point shooter in the lineup, among others, made a couple of signings as well in there. But that was definitely the highest profile signing that this team made in the offseason. Otherwise, based on growth of the younger players, the healthy return of Jaden Ivey, we'll see what this team had. I actually had, based on not only projected growth, but by virtue of the fall of some other teams in the Eastern Conference, based on injuries, the Boston Celtics, the Indiana Pacers, Milwaukee Bucks, I had a lot of those teams stepping back. So by virtue of that, I was like, okay, I think this Pistons team can really compete with the Knicks and the Cavs for a top 3 spot. And that's where I had the Pistons going into the season. I thought, hey, if things go well, they could be a top 3 seed. And things went far better than I thought. So going to the start of the season, opened the season on October 22nd, they dropped their season opener to the Chicago Bulls, 115-111. And that was a little bit of oof, yikes. Not the way that the Pistons needed to start their season. I mean, I expected the Bulls to not be that good of a team. They started hot, like the first 2 or 3 weeks. They were a pretty hot team, and I think gave some people a false sense of, the Bulls are back, which I kind of knew, like, no, they're not back. We've seen this a few times in the last couple years. Really last 10, 15 years from that team. But they bounced back. Big win against the Houston Rockets on the road, which to me is like, wow, this was a Rockets team that was that just really good young team, just like the Pistons, but they just acquired Kevin Durant in the offseason trying to elevate this team, get them over the hump. So this was a Houston Rockets team going into the season, looked at as being a top two seed in the Western Conference. So huge win on the road for the Pistons. And then the Pistons just seem to keep racking up the wins. They rounded out October, beating the Celtics, losing to the Cavs, beating the Magic. And then into November, they went on that double-digit winning streak. As we quickly add up right here, it was a 13-game winning streak from the end of October into late November. They lost to the Boston Celtics and then the Orlando Magic back-to-back. But very few times would this Pistons team actually lose consecutive games. They just continued to rack up wins. Keep in mind, during this time, we also had some injuries to the Pistons as well. Some key guys, Cade Cunningham missing some time. Jalen Duren missed some time. Tobias Harris was in and out of the lineup pretty early on during the regular season. But the Pistons team quickly developed a knack for the next guy up mentality. In this time as well, we saw guys like Danis Jenkins really step up, come out of the woodwork. Came from being a two-way player to converted to a full-time contract, and obviously we'll see later in the season, started some playoff games. So that was a huge revelation for this Pistons team. But yeah, just being able to have guys step up, and it felt like, okay, no matter how many injuries this Pistons team is going to have, they're going to find a way to overcome it and still be competitive. So through November, Pistons in a great spot, leading the Eastern Conference. At that time, you had the Boston Celtics, who were playing a lot better than I thought they would, and then you had the Knicks and Cavs that were lagging a little bit behind, but you saw them both start to threaten, and it was like, okay, is this actually going to be sustainable by the Pistons, or did the Pistons just start hot through the first month, month and a half of the season, and then once these other teams that started off not so hot, once they get hot, are we going to see things even out? But evidently, as those other teams started to go through their runs, the Pistons just maintained a stranglehold over the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. I think the closest the team ever came was maybe 3.5 games. Later on, the Pistons went through a four-game losing streak, which is the longest losing streak they had of the season, all the way in March. And the Celtics started to get hot at that time. But yeah, even then, they still had a pretty safe, comfortable lead for number one. But yeah, December rolls along, continue to win games. And then into January, same thing. Just continue to rack up the wins. Obviously, in February, the team rewarded with two All-Stars. You had Cade Cunningham and you had Jalen Duren. Cade Cunningham making his first start as an All-Star, second to All-Star team overall. And then Jalen Duren, of course, making his first All-Star team. So the Pistons getting some good representation there at the All-Star game. And then at that time, that's when you start to see Cade Cunningham starting to be mentioned in the MVP discussions as well, being a dark horse MVP candidate. So this Pistons team really riding high going into the end of February. I should preface this as well, mid-February. That's when you had the suspension game against the Hornets. Jalen Duren suspended, Isaiah Stewart suspended. And then coming into March, we had a couple of games mid-March against the Washington Wizards. And in one of those, that's when Cade Cunningham left the game early, only 5 minutes in, due to a collapsed lung. And that knocked him out for most of the rest of the regular season. But even then, Pistons, again, just didn't seem to lose a beat. Still continued to consistently win games. He was able to come back at the very end of the regular season, and the Pistons ended up winning 60 games on the regular season, culminating the number one seed for the first time in, 20 years? Close to 20 years. So the Pistons were in a good spot they're gonna face a team in the play-in, and this has got the making, especially with how the team has played all season. Not going on really many losing streaks. Again, that 4-game losing streak, that's as long as it got. That's a very small losing streak for the NBA to be your long losing streak of the season. And didn't often lose back-to-back games, period. And just their ability to overcome injuries and have guys step up. Combined with star talent, great young core. You got Cade Cunningham, MVP candidate. He's your motor, your driver, your leader. You got Jalen Duren, your rock-solid presence down low. You got Asar Thompson, terrific defensive player, terrific presence. And then you got the starting lineup really rounded out by a knockdown three-point shooter in Duncan Robinson, and then a veteran leadership, kind of a Swiss Army knife, do-it-all kind of guy in a Tobias Harris. Not to mention a lot of other key guys off the bench. So going into the playoffs, you got the Orlando Magic in the first round. Going to continue the talk on the other side as we obviously do a quick recap on the playoff run. And then going to chat on what we can expect in the offseason moving forward for this Pistons team. So we'll be back in a moment. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery. Weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and our friends at Polly's Country Markets. So many deals all the time. You can see them online, country-markets.com. That's country-markets.com. And also, while you're there, sign up for My Market Rewards and start saving even more in store today. For Polly's Country Markets, see one of the convenient locations around Jackson County today. So continuing the Pistons season autopsy, on into the playoffs. You got the Orlando Magic, who got into the playoffs by way of the play-in tournament. They were the true number 8 seed in the Eastern Conference, and of course that's the seed that they ended up being. After the play-in tournament. And so the Pistons, game one, they kind of got smacked in the mouth a little bit. They came out flat. They went on their fair share of runs, and they were able to outright tie a few times. But the Magic, it seemed like they had an answer each and every time. And the Magic were able to upset the Pistons in the first game, 112-101. Stole game one. So it's like, all right, Pistons, you know, they were clearly not ready for this playoff series. It's one thing the year before that you're that young, up-and-coming team. I mean, they still are to an extent. But when you're that young, up-and-coming team, you make your first time in the playoffs, you know, you have that hunger. You want to prove yourselves. But then all of a sudden to flip it and you're the number one seed, you're the hunted instead of the hunter. And the Orlando Magic, after a little bit of a down year in terms of where they expected to be in the regular season, they were the teams that they wanted to come out. They had something to prove. And they played like that throughout the series, really. They stole that first game. Pistons came back in the second game, very low scoring, 98-83, with that 30-3 run. Or whatever it was, that huge run to start the third quarter, flipped that game on its head. Pistons came away with that win. 1-1 tie going into Orlando, and now the job is to do at least what the Orlando Magic did. Try to split these games. You got to win at least one of these two in Orlando. And that is not what happened. Orlando Magic take game three, 113-105, clutch scoring. Able to pull away late. And then same case in game four. Low scoring this time, 94-88. And then just like that, 3-1. And it's like, ugh. We all know the stats, the success rate for teams falling behind 3-1. But the Pistons, it just felt, ugh. That was it. Everything that the Pistons did over the regular season undone in a single series. However, You have two out of the three at home. If you can at least take it one game at a time, you could turn this around. The Pistons in game five, they do just that. They go home. They get the win. They were helped out by a Franz Wagner injury, who was key for the Orlando Magic in those first three wins for them. But the Pistons do turn it around. Cade Cunningham stepping up. 116-109 after Cade Cunningham scored 45. Made it 3-2, and then here's the toughest game of the series for the Pistons. Go on the road. A tough environment for the Pistons to play in this series. Halftime. Pistons down over 20. They trailed by as many as 24 at the beginning of the third quarter. Season looks over for the Pistons. But that's when they crank up the defense to 11. Completely shut down the Orlando Magic from there. 93-79 is the final score. And the Pistons, they come back from the dead. And just like that, they force Game 7, and they have the momentum on their side. And the Pistons did what they needed to do in Game 7. They go on a big run in the second quarter, continue to build that lead through the rest of the game. And the Pistons officially overcame the 3-1 deficit, avoided a huge upset and collapse. Man, I can't even imagine what this season autopsy would have been like if the Pistons ended up losing that series to the Orlando Magic. So on the Pistons go, winning in 7 against Orlando. And they take on a team that also won in 7 against the Toronto Raptors, the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the Pistons, they continued that momentum that they had at the end of that Magic series right on into Games 1 and 2. Game 1, they played very well late, 111-101, taking a 1-0 series lead. And then same thing in Game 2. Some very strong defense from the Pistons, 107-97, able to make a little bit of a later push. Cleveland late having a lead in that one. But the thing was, in those first two games, Cleveland looking very sloppy, and I think the majority of the Pistons, you know, runs and scoring was capitalizing on that sloppiness. And it's like, okay, Cleveland, I can expect them to probably clean things up. And that's exactly what they did, games 3 and 4. The Cavs taking that one, 116-109 in game 3. You'd use the big second quarter, taking a double-digit halftime lead, and then the Pistons getting back you into third and even leading late in that one, but collapsing late. Can't execute late in games, which is a consistent theme in the playoffs for the Pistons. Late in close games, I should say. And then game 4, same thing. Donovan Mitchell, consistent theme. He's starting to take over this series for the Cavaliers. Going back home for game 5. 2-2 series tie. Big game in a tied series. And the Pistons collapse late, up 9 with 3 minutes left. They end up choking, and the Cavs steal it in overtime, 117-113. So now the Pistons have to go on the road to Cleveland, down 3-2, trying to keep their season alive, and they do just that. Great second half from the Pistons. They go into that tough environment, 115-94, force another Game 7. But unfortunately, unlike the Magic series, the Pistons, they got boat raced right from the beginning. Quick double-digit deficit, and the Pistons just, they never had it in this one. They missed a lot of easy shots early. And the Cavs, they actually overcame that tough Pistons defense, which was so tough all playoffs long. But the Cavs, they saved their best offensive performance for last. And the Pistons offense just didn't have it in this one. 125-94, Pistons season comes to an end in the second round. After being the number one seed, winning 60 games. So, on face value, again, being the number one seed, winning 60 games, you're out to the number four seed in the second round. You know, that does sting, but look at it in the context of where this Pistons team is as a whole in their development cycle. Again, this is just two seasons after winning 14 games. If you told anybody 2 years ago that, hey, in 2 years from now, the Pistons are going to go all the way to a Game 7 in the second round of the playoffs, you'd be like, oh, awesome. You know, this is the first playoff series win for the Pistons since 2008. They overcame a 3-1 deficit, for crying out loud. You know, I even even though we wanted to keep it going, I will absolutely take this Pistons season 10 times out of 10. That's what this organization needed. You need to start turning it around. You need, I mean, shoot, somebody please give this lesson to the Red Wings. You know? You have to get this turned around. It starts with making the playoffs, and then, okay, once you finally make the playoffs, then how do we start to make some progress, go on a little bit of a run? And moving on past the first round, that's a good step for this Pistons team. Now, how do they take that next step? One of the big problems for the Pistons in the playoffs was getting that second guy, that second scorer. Obviously, Cade Cunningham doing a lot on his shoulders. We saw a lot of good scoring, secondary scoring from Tobias Harris, but the Pistons really needed a lot more on the offensive side of the ball from Jalen Duren. He took a massive step back in this series. And I don't know if that's necessarily a product of who the teams that the Pistons faced, what they did in those matchups. I know they had a lot of good big men in those series to really clog up the paint, disrupt what the Pistons were doing with Duren during the regular season. A lot of rim running, you know, lobs and such. He's not really a shot creator in the post. And then same thing with the Cavs. A lot of, you know, two great big men, great defensive big men at that, really stifling what he could do. But, I mean, at that same time, Isaiah Stewart and Paul Reed especially were able to come in and step up and make a big impact off the bench in fewer minutes than Jalen Duren. So he had a very rough playoff run in on an individual level. I think the Pistons needed a lot more on that standpoint. Otherwise, I think if the Pistons make any meaningful upgrades, they're going to have to try to make a trade. Looking at next season for the salary cap, you have Cade Cunningham. Obviously, he is in the middle of his big contract. So he's under contract through 2030. So he's good for a while. Duncan Robinson's under contract for another two seasons. Isaiah Stewart for another season. Caris LeVert, Asar Thompson, Ron Holland, Paul Reed, Marcus Sasser, and then Chaz Lanier, all under contract for at least this next season. Danis Jenkins has a team option. You know the Pistons are going to pick that up with what he was able to do this season. Otherwise, Jalen Duren is a restricted free agent, which this provides a big questions for the Pistons. Obviously, they can match any offer that other teams give him in free agency, which I would actually recommend the Pistons do. Wait and see. Don't give him an offer early unless you can get him at a cheap discount, which you might be able to after his playoff run. But I don't know. After he looked in the playoffs, I don't know if teams would be necessarily champing at the bit to try to get this guy at a max contract. And obviously the Pistons, I believe, despite that, offer him more than other teams. But again, at the very least, they can match what other teams can give him. So if the Pistons can try to see if they can get him for cheaper, I doubt they give him a max contract. It obviously depends on if he even makes an All-NBA team, which I think based on the regular season, he probably will make an All-NBA team, at least All-NBA third team. That should still put him in line for a Supermax contract, which I doubt. No way the Pistons are going to give that to him. So I do think Jalen Duren should be sticking around with the Pistons next year, but I don't think he's going to get as much money as he probably hoped for off of a playoff run like that. But he's only 23 years old, very young. He's still got a lot of growth to do, and I expect him to be getting in the gym and working on his offense, his scoring in the offseason. Otherwise, Tobias Harris is an unrestricted free agent. General manager Trajan Langdon did speak that he wanted to keep both Duren and Harris. Harris might be a little bit tougher being an unrestricted guy, but he is 35 coming up this season. So we'll see. We'll see what it's going to take to keep him. Kevin Huerter's unrestricted. Pistons, I could see him walking. Pistons acquired him at the trade deadline, but he really did not fill that big of a role for the team. And then Javonte Green as well, who was not really a part of the playoff rotation either. So he's a guy I could see the Pistons letting walk as well. But that otherwise, again, pretty much the majority of the roster, your key guys are already tied up. So if the Pistons, in my opinion, maybe try to get another big-time scorer, we'll see what's out there this offseason. I know, you know, maybe Devin Booker, Michigan native Devin Booker. Maybe the Pistons try to do something to get him back in town. But I don't know, the Pistons are in a really good spot. Still a very young team. Still can grow. But at this point, it's going to have to likely be in trades, not in free agency, to try to make something happen. I think a guy like Devin Booker would be a great addition to this Pistons team. But otherwise, hey, Danis Jenkins, another year of development. We already know what this guy can bring. Paul Reed, I expect him to have an increased role next season based on what he was able to bring coming in off the bench during the regular season with some of those injuries and in the playoffs as well. So, I don't know, nowhere but up. Continued development, hopefully, for this Pistons team. Will they win 60 games next year? I don't know. But I think this Pistons team, they know what to do in the playoffs. They know how the game changes a little bit from the regular season into the playoffs. And how do they get the offense going a little bit more? We know the defense was there in the playoffs, which was great. Consistently held teams to under 100 points, if not under 110, which is great for today's NBA. But how do the Pistons take the next step? And I think clutch scoring specifically was a big problem in the playoffs for the Pistons as well. So a couple of question marks, but again, a great season overall for the Pistons. Absolute success, even though it's a little bit of a bittersweet ending, getting blown out in Game 7. But I'll take it. I'll take it for this Pistons team in their development, especially what this Pistons team has had to go through for the last 20 or so years. One more segment on the other side, wrapping up the program today. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bellinotti Ristorante, Bud Light, and Tri-County Water. Quick tidbits right here to wrap up the show today. U of M obviously have several players that initially declared for the NBA draft, but May 27th is the deadline to officially go through with this draft or to decline and actually withdraw and go back to college. Well, we have a couple decisions made. Elliot Cadeau, of course, he early on said that he wanted to stay with U of M for his senior year, but then he did eventually declare for the draft. He actually did withdraw yesterday. So Elliot Cadeau back with the Wolverines for his senior season. And then Moraes Johnson on the other side, he is confirmed going to stay in the NBA draft. So no more Moraes Johnson for the Wolverines. No, a couple other guys were kind of waiting on Adai Mara. Haven't heard yet officially on him. And then on Michigan State's side, Jeremy Fears. No word yet on him. I know both those guys had that option as well to withdraw and go back to college, but have not heard yet. But we will. Again, we got about 7 days left before that. So that'll do it for the program today. Tigers, again, live coverage at 6:40 on these airwaves this evening. Otherwise, we'll be broadcasting live from the downtown studio tomorrow. Until then, peace.
If you missed today's installment of On the Docket, podcast it at foxsports1019.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to tune in live weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.